What's good? What's good? Welcome back to Akoye Media Podcast for our You Be the Judge segment with Jamil Parker from Into Boxing. Shout out to our sponsors, Into Boxing, as well. But welcome Jamil Parker back to the set. This is our second time recording, but due to our technical difficulties, we had to scrap our first interview, and that was a classic. So hopefully we follow that up again. Let's give it up for Mildo. What up, Millie?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
We go back to, he don't like to say, but we go back to our hedonistic days. We weren't always into boxing. It was strip clubs and bars before we were managing it.
We were always into boxing. That was
okay.
Just
yeah, that's true. That was actually where we got cool over. We both were cool because we were into boxing. But we met, you know, working at strip clubs and bars and shit like that. But what's up, man? How you?
I'm good, man. I had a real busy week. I'm good though. Tired, but I'm good.
What you been up to, man? I know you went to the fights last weekend, but you know, other than that, what you been up to?
Just trying to build our brand in the U.S. We're already established in the U.K., but our YouTube is a little dry. So, you know, hey, subscribe to Into Boxing on YouTube. It's a lot of good content, interviews with Andre Ward, Algieri, Robert Garcia, et cetera. But just basically trying to build, man.
What do they do? I'm not even bullshitting. What does Into Boxing do?
We're boxing media.
Right.
And we just want to get the fans, you know, in tune with, you know, what's going on and, you know, what fights are out there, mm-hmm. what are the good fighters, up-and-coming fighters,
right.
and have a platform for the guys who don't have a platform.
Right.
Everybody doesn't have an Eddie Hearn right. or, you know, Al Haymon or Bob Arum behind
right.
them. So just get their names out there.
Got you. So people look to you guys to, like, kind of find them and help push them in front of the mainstream, so to speak?
Basically, especially the guys who are from the U.S. that want to tap into that U.K. market.
Right.
Because even though I'm the East Coast liaison for Into Boxing
U.S.
We have a West Coast guy's name is like John Zimmel. Mm-hmm. They're based out of the U.K.
Gotcha.
So if you really want to get fights in the U.K., then, you know, you want to make yourself, you know, known to their fans.
Gotcha. That makes sense, man. You watched that Spence fight, though, right?
Yeah, I watched that.
I knew that dude was going to get ass kicking, man.
It went kind of, well, number one, I didn't know that Spence had that much variety in his boxing game.
I mean, it's easy to have that much variety when you're fighting a dude that's like, you know, 3 inches shorter, slower. He's not only smaller coming up, jumping, you know, in weight, but he's also slower, you know, and less athletic anyway.
Yeah.
And then he's fighting a southpaw. You know, it's just, that's...
A big southpaw puncher.
Yeah, who looks to kill you. Like, Spence was trying to murder him out there, man.
I don't understand. You had people picking Mikey.
Like, I saw that Dana White actually bet on Mikey Garcia. He bet 10 grand. He would have won 23.
I think that might have been like the gambler ending. Like,
yeah,
hey, let me just take the
just in case this shit happens, I'll make some money off of it.
But Mikey really didn't have, like, as you said, the athletic skill set.
To make that
jump. It's like, right. that's a hard jump.
Right.
Pac-Man, he made the jump, but, you right. know, Pac-Man's a freak athlete.
Right.
Who else made the jump? I think Shane Mosley.
Pac-Man was on, like, all kinds of
Shane
steroids,
Mosley.
I think.
Yeah, but, I mean, outside of that, it's never
Pac-Man
been proof.
He was knocking the shit out of people when he was coming up. I don't know how the hell he was knocking people out like that, though, but I think he was on something. That's just me. You know, if you're a Pac-Man fan and you think I'm hating, oh, well. You know, see me, but I was just saying that boy got power out of nowhere. He's knocking the shit out of people, man.
Yeah, he got Ricky Hatton real good, yo. That right. might have been one of the best knockouts.
Yeah, he almost killed Ricky Hatton, man. But Ricky Hatton got knocked out by Floyd too, so it's like okay.
Yeah, know, but not in that fashion.
Not like that.
The turnbuckle helped.
Yeah, that one right there was like craziness. Like I felt bad for Ricky after that knockout.
Where do you think Mikey goes from here?
Back down and wait. Mikey needs to go back and try to seek a fight out with either Gervonta at some point. I think it's prime for Gervonta. That could be a big money fight now because there's definitely blood in the water. People think they can beat him. You know, Gervonta's a southpaw as well, a hard-punching southpaw pressure fighter like Spence, just shorter. So they might want to jump on to Mikey Garcia right now, you know. So I think that would be the next money fight for Garcia, probably be against Gervonta if they can find a weight that they're both happy with. But I think Garcia needs to be like 135, 140, man.
Gervonta is 130. And would you bring Mikey down all the way back down to 135?
Not right now. That would be like that Roy Jones effect.
Yeah.
Everything he put into, even though he didn't look like he was like, you know, he looked slow and fat. He didn't look chiseled. He even looked, I said that at the weigh-in. I said, oh, man. He didn't look like a boxer for the first time, I think, ever. Mikey Garcia didn't look like a boxer at the weigh-in. He looked like a fan, you know, who's about to fight a boxer. He was like, oh, shit, look at the guy he's about to fucking fight. Like, Spence was chiseled like a Greek god. Yeah. Man, this dude sitting here, like, smiling. I'm like, he looked like a kid at the grocery store.
Yo, I'm pretty sure that Spence walked in at like 160 something.
Yeah, and then Garcia was probably 147 still.
Yeah, maybe. But it's an athletic. Like, this is what I do.
It's like a tiger 400 pounds versus a whale. Exactly. 400 pounds. It's like, nah, the tiger is 400 pounds of muscles of put to more use. You know what I'm saying?
There was two other cards. Mm-hmm. Farmer versus Carroll. It was down at the Lear Court Center. Mm-hmm. Finally we get some boxing in Philly. We need to really bring that back. Us being, you know, two Philadelphia natives, right. It's nice not having to travel 2 hours to see a quality fight.
Yeah, going to New York get kind of old sometimes.
But Farmer versus Carroll was like the whole card.
Yeah.
On paper, it didn't really look like a competitive card. Mm. Outside of Selecki versus Rosado, which was the fight of the night.
Right.
But, you know, started off with,
I heard Rosado fought back hard.
Man, look. Rosado is definitely like the live embodiment of Rocky.
Gabby used to come to the bar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. I remember seeing him once in there, and he didn't look real. You know, he looked like, you know what I mean? His face didn't look real. You know, pale dude, but cool. Always cool.
Yo, like, I seen him at the weigh-in. Like, you can tell, I think at that time he's, what, 154?
Right.
He had a title shot at 154, and he chose, I think it was with K-9 Bundridge.
Mm. That's a throwback.
Yeah, he chose to go up to 160 to fight Triple G. And they offered a catch weight, and he said no. He wanted to fight Triple G at his actual weight. So that just shows what kind of guy he is.
Yeah, but that, see, I like that, but it's like a catch. That's a catch 22, man. Mm-hmm. Like, and no disrespect to Gabby, but sometimes, man, and I think the Triple G fight actually, you know, put his name out there to the point where he's able to come out and get, you know, pretty good paydays probably now. And I don't know, I'm not counting his money, but I'm pretty sure he's always in the prime time, so I'm pretty sure he's doing okay. But, so I take nothing away from that. But had he kind of slowed up a little bit instead of jumping out there and biting that much off, they could have built a brand around Gabby. Because Gabby has a heart of, like, he's like the real Rocky, for real. Yeah. Like, you can cut him, you can bust his face open, you can try to knock him out. He will get the fuck up and try to kill you. So that within itself is marketable, but it's sort of like Saad Muhammad. Remember Matthew Saad Muhammad?
Yeah.
He used to do that. Like, he used to be in wars where, you know, he'd be going back and forth, you're pounding on him something crazy, and then out of nowhere, he puts together a combination and changes the whole fight. And people used to love him for it. But when you do that too much, it's sort of like that Ali effect. It's like, you only can do that, but, I mean, you only can dance with death, but so many times, you know what I mean? You want some fights where they do that like they did with Arturo Gatti. Arturo Gatti started to dwindle because of that same thing. He was in a lot of wars. And then he got with Buddy McGirt. Buddy McGirt taught him how to box a little bit more, stop going in there trying to exchange every chance he got. And he extended his career and actually reinvigorated it to a point where he wound up fighting, you know, Floyd. He got some money fights out of that. He got De La Hoya afterward. After Buddy McGirt got with him, he gave him, you know, another 10 fights, I believe, on his career. Okay. So that's important.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, Gabe is like always been a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Damn.
No, because I felt okay. So let me tell you about the Selecki fight.
Right.
Selecki fight. You could tell Selecki was the bigger puncher.
Right.
So Selecki.
How so though? Like what was
just his. When Gabe will land the combination, like they both throw at the same time.
Right.
And you would just. Selecki's joints was like was real like, thudding shots. You could just hear him.
Yeah, he's like.
And our first Gabe was trying to, you know, box and move, you know, work off the jab. And then Selecki caught him with, I think, a counter right hand. A drop Gabe.
I think I saw
that. Yeah, it was a flash knockdown.
Came right over his left shoulder.
Yeah, it was a flash knockdown. But then later on, Selecki lands a left hook straight right combo.
Damn.
Gabe landed a straight right and took a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Didn't bring back the hand. Mm-hmm. And Selecki just countered him and just
floored him.
Yeah. And Gabe was hurt, but that, you know, experience of fighting the best carried Gabe through the round because I thought he was done. Yeah. Everybody thought he was done. Two rounds later, Gabe drops him twice.
Wow.
But in spectacular fashion.
Damn.
First one was a flash, but the second one, he kind of like held Gabe's left arm.
Right.
And Gabe might have hit him like seven straight times with the right to the point where Selecki had to turn his back to Gabe and basically like go down. I felt like they should have stopped it.
Wow. Because they didn't want no more. So was he turning away like he was still coherently turning away, or did he just turn away?
No, he was still coherently turning away, but I feel like once you turn away, it's a wave off.
What was Gabe still hitting him when he turned his back though?
No,
I mean he probably should just kept.
He was like turning away, going down.
Oh, okay.
But he made sure he turned away.
Right.
So I felt like they could have stopped it, but that was the end of the round.
Right.
And they end up giving Selecki a UD.
Yeah.
So, but I felt like Gabe should have got a hometown
decision.
I
don't think Gabe's at the point in his career where he's meant to fight to win by the scorecards. I don't think he's going to win those anymore because they're putting him in there because he's that tough opponent that can give your guy a good fight, but he's not meant to win these fights. That's why they keep putting him in there with these types of guys. He's like the new Zab Judah. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I remember just Zab was the guy that he was the proving grounds for young and up and coming fighters for a little while before he retired. And then you had that with DeMarcus Chop Corley. There's a lot of guys out there that are like that. You know what I mean? The Drunken Master, what was his name? He was another guy like that. You remember the Drunken Master? What's his
Emmanuel
name?
Augustus.
Emmanuel Augustus, yep. He was another one of those guys that's good enough to beat anybody. But just not that guy where, you know, you're going to invest and promote him, you know. But he's good enough to give anybody a rumble, and that's where Gabe Rosado is. He'll give you a rumble, but if it comes to the scorecards, he knows that it's stacked against him, like Luis Collazo type guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. The fight was for the right to fight Demetrius Andre for the WBO.
Man, that's, I mean... He saved himself an ass whooping. Selecki gonna get his ass whooped too. Like, why you want to get in there?
I honestly think that
was for the fight to end your career. Like, what? Like, you might as well have said that.
Like, Andre's not a big puncher though.
Andre will embarrass you though, man. He's
with
like
the jab.
He is like the dude from he like Israel. What's his name from MMA? The style bender. He's like a style bender boxer. You know what I mean? This dude got, he's like Bud Crawford. You know, he can fight southpaw. He can fight conventional. He can fight inside, outside. Every part of his game is solid enough. Where now, is he an explosive puncher? He wasn't. But he looks a lot stronger now than he did. He's getting bigger. He's getting bigger, but he's not, you know, it doesn't look like he's having a trouble catching weight or cutting weight. So
well, you think the jump from 154 to 160 like bode well? Because he always had a big frame.
I mean, he at the end of it, he might be a light heavyweight by the time it's all said and done. As tall as he is, he's what 6'1", 6'2"?
6'1", 6'2", yeah.
Yeah, he might be a light heavyweight by the time it's all said and done. I think he can carry 175. He probably comes into the ring right now 170. 173, somewhere in there.
I mean, I could
like Jared Hurd, that dude is definitely a cruiserweight. He's a cruiserweight that has a freakish ability to cut weight and keep strength. Because this dude is really, you can't tell me he doesn't walk around 200 pounds. He's bigger than me. I'm 240 pounds, but this dude makes me look like a regular sized guy. And then he gets down to a weight where, you know, he's fighting dudes who've been walking around at 160 their whole life. That shit is not fair, man.
I have no idea. I have no idea how, like, he's, I don't have no idea how and why he's still at 154. Like, I know he's the unified champ.
Right.
But the money's at 160.
Right.
And you know, it's not like, oh, I got to build up strength. Nah, bro. You got the strength already.
Yeah.
He's walking down anybody. I don't care how big of a puncher you are at 154.
But see, that's why he's another one of those guys that you kind of have to bring him along a little different. Like, he needs some more fights against fighters that can't punch. He needs that. Because they keep putting him against guys who are okay, and they're looking for wars. He's going to war himself right out of a career, because I don't care how big you are, you can't take that many blows to the face. He blocks with his face. Jared Hurd's face has to be pound for pound. He's like Antonio Margarito from back in the day where you couldn't knock the dude the fuck out. You just had to keep pounding on him. He's still going to be – or like El Peto, what's his name? Angulo.
Yeah.
Angulo. Both those dudes, you – now, they were good, but after a while, it's like, remember Five Deadly Venoms? You know, you had the toe at the end, and you couldn't fuck with this dude, but then right after you figured it out where his Achilles heel was, it was like over for him.
Yeah.
It's like that for those guys. It's like they're tough as shit until they're not. And then when somebody cracked that code or cracked that chin, it's like it's a wrap after that. So I feel like Hurd is going to be of that ilk if he tries to. Like, if he fights any of the Charlo brothers with his style, either one of them. And with his style, and he allows them to punch on him like he let other guys punch on him. It's a wrap. Now, they say he can box. His name's Swift. They say he can box. Hopefully he can transition into that type of style when it's called for. Otherwise, he's going to be like Chavez Jr., man.
I don't know how he got the nickname Swift.
Yeah, I don't know where he got it. He don't look too swift. But they say he's swift. I know he hit hard, though.
Yeah.
The dude hit like a grown-ass mule.
He got power. He has like a real awkward style and an awkward stance to where as though you really can't, like, even though you're landing shots, they're not really landing super flush.
Oh, yeah, he rolls with him. Yeah. He rolls his shoulders real good. He keep his head tucked. He got that crab style like Archie Moore used to have, like cross block. Yeah. He does a little cross block, put his head down and protect his chin. That works for him. And that worked for a lot of guys back in the day, too. And when you're fighting fighters who don't have a high punch output, if you roll off, if you kind of slip the first punch or that jab or the hook, whatever they're leading with, and you roll off that, and you anticipate and roll off that second, then you're only worried about that third punch in that combination if they choose to sit there for that long. And that's what he's waiting for. He counters off the exchange. So he waits for you to engage with your first and second shot. He usually gives you two shots before he starts his combinations. And then he'll start right in the middle of yours, which leaves him exposed to get hit, which is why he gets hit a lot. But he feels like his chin is better than your punching power. And if he lands on you in the middle of you punching, it's going to discourage you from punching. And he feels like he's going to hurt you more than you can hurt him. That's his style. That's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to it.
I mean, you definitely summed it up. Did you watch the Laura fight?
I did. I think Laura had a real good shot at winning that fight. It's just that, again, he's fighting a wall, a moving wall that doesn't have a lot of skill shown anyway. He's fighting a moving wall, and that's what he was fighting. Like, he Hurd wasn't, outclassing him. It was just that he was way too big. Yeah. It looked like he was fighting.
Hurd is about, 6'1"?
Yeah, 6'1".
6'1", 154.
Laura, 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah.
And he really ain't really one. Laura could fight at welter. I mean, at 147, if he felt like killing himself to make weight,
you think?
Yeah, the dude's not big, man. He's not a big.
He's
dude.
Long.
Yeah, he's not a real big dude. I think he's comfortable at 154 or 160, but I don't think he doesn't look like the type to walk around above 168. He might walk around 168 somewhere in there, maybe. And so does Danny Garcia. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they both, he can make 147.
I've never seen Danny, in person. Is he a lot bigger than? than 147?
He looked a lot more. He looked heavier than 147. He don't look like a little dude. Like we hung out one time at your dad's bar, matter of fact, at Jaggy's. We hung out at Jaggy's one night, and you know, he looked my size. And then I saw him again recently. I was flying from San Fran. I was about to get on a plane, and I just turned around, and Danny Garcia was standing right there. I was like, "What's up, Danny?" Walked up. I didn't want to look like a fanboy, and so I just walked up and like shook his hand and just kept it moving. But he didn't seem like a real big dude by my height, and but he looked sturdy.
I tell you, it is definitely a culture shock. Like, you know, being a regular guy, and you know, having regular size, and you walk up on a boxer. Mm-hmm. They look bigger in TV than they actually are.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's because everything's blown up when you're watching TV. It's adjusted to scale or something like that.
I did an interview with Chris Algieri. Mm-hmm. Chris Algieri is a tall welterweight.
Yeah, yeah, he's a tall dude.
He's a tall welterweight.
Like 5'11", 6 foot, right?
He's supposed to be like 5'10", 5'11", but he didn't seem that way, you know, standing next to him.
Right.
Looked about 5'9", but he's a tall welterweight. So then you think about Tommy Hearns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure these guys today, I think Tommy knocks them all out.
All the welterweights that are out here right now?
Yes.
I think Bud and Spence could fight in any era. I would say that.
No, I didn't say they couldn't fight.
I think they could get
it. I'm just talking about, like, Tommy's like, Spence is billed as a big welterweight, right? 5'9.5".
Yeah.
Tommy's 6'1".
Yeah. Yeah, Tommy would be a problem for anybody. But
yeah.
Once you get inside of Tommy, he had actually an inside fighting game too, though, to be honest with you. That, for a guy with long arms, he could fight on the inside. But he's just a lot better when he's on his toes, on his wheels, on the outside, on that bike, with True. That stick in his hand. His jab was crazy. Shout out to Emmanuel Stewart, rest in peace, man. That dude, he could train up a jab because all of his fighters, that was like the one commonality. They all had like a snapping, sudden jab. Klitschko. I mean, look at how he showed you how important the jab and a good defense or a good grapple game could be. Like Lennox Lewis, jab, grapple. Klitschko, jab, grapple. You know what I'm saying? Jermaine Taylor tried the jab, grapple, and then he got beat by the jab, grapple master, Bedard Hopkins.
Oh, he won them two fights.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying, but Bedard made him look like an average dude. He was getting cursed out. You know what I'm saying? But, Kelly Pavlik actually killed him, right?
Frotch, too.
Yeah, Frotch knocked him
out. Frotch with that awkward.
That was it. That was a career-ending punch right there. He thought awkward, he had a career after
like,
that.
Frotch has, like, these crazy arm punches.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't get the proper leverage or nothing.
Nah, he unorthodox. You could survive, like, publicly, you could survive an ass-kicking more so than you could survive, like, one of those sudden flash knockouts like that. That kind of derails a lot of careers. Like, you don't see too many dudes get this shit knocked out of them and come back and do anything. You know what I mean? Like, they either retire or they fight maybe one, two more fights. Only a few dudes have done it. Like, Chris Bird.
Why do you think that is, though?
I think you already have enough family pressure as a fighter, as is. You already have a certain amount of money that you're climbing towards, and it's hard enough to earn a real lip. Like, think about it. Like, dudes will fight for 50K, and you'll say, damn, you got 50K for 30 minutes? I'll do that. But he had to, you know, he had to eat for 4 months or for 2 months, or had to eat, period, you know, before that fight. He had to pay for expenses, living expenses, family, so on, before that fight. So he's probably in debt before the fight even starts. And then that fight might break him even. Now, imagine climbing those charts, and then after you lose, your take home pay now gets cut or is bumped lower than it was. Like, you had an interview with Andre Ward, yeah. And he was talking about that, and I was like, you know, we was paying attention to that.
I never knew that. I never knew, you know, after taking a loss, your minimum drops.
What made Ward put you on to that? Like, what was he talking about?
He was talking about I think it was Mick Conlon, and he was talking about how you know, Mick looked good, and that, you know, he didn't, that and how we didn't take chances. Oh, I'm sorry. As a matter of fact, no. He was talking about Mikey Garcia and Errol Spence. I'm sorry. Sorry, Dre Ward. He was referring to, somebody asked him, did he, do you think Mikey got the moral victory?
Right.
He said he doesn't believe in moral victory.
Yeah,
you know, specifically from the business aspect of it.
Right.
And if my minimum drops when fighting such a dangerous opponent,
right,
and my return isn't worth the risk, why am I going to fight?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, a perfect example. A lot of people are giving Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford, you know, a lot of criticism because the fight hasn't happened yet.
Right.
I feel like there, you know, there was a conversation between Al Haymon and Bob Arum. And I don't think the fight is ready yet.
I don't think so either.
Neither is a household name.
True.
And am I going to go up against, because that's the biggest test. Like, I like Keith Thurman, but there's some holes in Keith Thurman where there isn't as many holes in Crawford and Spence. Crawford and Spence, I would say, are probably the most complete welterweights.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, if I'm Bud Crawford, I know this is my biggest test at 147. Okay, so am I going to fight this guy for $3 million? Or am I going to wait and fight this guy for $8
million? That's true. I mean, that's true. I feel like I agree with that sentiment when people are like, yo, they should fight right now. I think that fight should be one that waits. You know, sort of like you don't want to have a fight like that too early. Because, one, you don't make as much money as you could have made, and two, I think it changes, it unfairly changes the trajectory of certain guys' careers. That's like if you wanted Zab and Floyd Mayweather to fight back when they both were cool, when they both were up and coming. That was too early for them to fight. Now, you knew that eventually when they fought, it was going to be some shit, but you had to let some shit happen first. And it's just that Zab was busy losing and derailing himself prior to getting to that point. Whereas Floyd was just steady money. But if Zab would have been able to keep his record going, can you imagine what type of, like when they actually did fight, can you imagine what type of fight it would have been had Zab not lost to Baldemir first, or had Zab lost to Costazu?
Yeah, Costazu. It was Costazu first, then it was Baldemir.
Yeah, and then, you know, he had some wars, some nice wars with Cotto. He had some good fights, but had he not going that way, had Costazu not knocked him out, and he and Floyd intersected each other and later on in their careers, that would have been even bigger than what it was. And shout out to Zab. Zab's the only man that ever knocked Floyd Mayweather on his ass. I'll give him credit where credit is due.
Yeah, and to me, that was my favorite Floyd Mayweather fight because I felt like Zab was up 3-1 after 4, and that should have been a knockdown.
Yeah.
And
I don't think Floyd would argue with that either. He would say, all right. I mean, you know, he got dropped.
I don't know, man. You know.
I mean, officially, he never got dropped, but I don't think he would argue. Like, you saw it.
The glove touched.
Yeah, he got hit in the glove touch. He wasn't hurt off of it.
No, it was a flash knockout, but he caught him with a good shot.
Shane hurt him the worst, but
yeah,
he wasn't hurt. I seen Chop Chop Corley hurt Floyd and Shane hurt Floyd, but I don't think that one was it that hurt him.
So you got, as far as with the Spence Crawford situation, you got some fans that's like, oh, you know, Bob's holding off the fight. And then you got, you know, the other people saying, oh, I'll scared because, you know, Spence will lose to Crawford. It's like, if you had the fight right now, what you going to get? 300, 400,000 pay-per-view buys?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's like, I want to see it now. I wouldn't mind seeing it now, but
nah,
like,
I don't want to see it now.
You know, as a fan, I'm greedy.
Yeah, but I want them both to get better though. Like they both need a test. Like they need a real test. I don't think Spence has really been tested because they've been crafty with the way they're bringing Spence along, man. Like him fighting Kell Brook when he fought Kell Brook.
Yeah, he caught Kell Brook. For all you Spence fans, because I really dislike y'all. They're really biased.
Spence fan hater.
No, they're really biased. Like,
right.
I think Spence is a good fighter.
Right.
But they build him up to be something that hasn't been proven yet.
I mean, he only can fight who he fought.
Yeah, but you can't tell me he's like, you know, he'll beat this guy, he'll beat that guy. I need to see more.
I mean, what has Bud done?
Bud's cleaned out a whole division.
This is Bud's at a weight he shouldn't even have been at.
At 140?
Yeah, he's like another Swift.
Come on,
I don't give you credit when you're a big dude going at down one, and killing. Diego Corrales was a beast too.
He came up from eating punches. He won a belt at 135.
Yeah.
Won a belt at 140. Yeah. And won a belt at 147.
Yeah.
So I can say
I'm talking about 147 though.
Yeah, yeah. But
AB was the man before 147 too, bro. You know that, right?
Right now he just got
AB was the man.
Is there a pattern with Bud? Is there a pattern of success? Yes or no?
You don't know because
No. Yes, you do. He cleaned out a whole division.
And I'm just saying.
You gotta respect that.
But I'm talking about, is there a way to beat Bud? You have no way of knowing.
Well, right now
because the guys that he's fighting have no chance of beating him. Because they can't even hurt him when they hit him. I saw him and Hank Lundy go at it, right? Him and Hank was going back and forth. Hank was throwing his best Sunday punches. He just was eating them. You know, same thing with I'm not taking Spence off the hook, though. Spence looked like he was in trouble against Brooke until Brooke's face broke down. And against Mikey Garcia hit him a couple times. It just didn't do shit to him.